Welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about soybean burn down. You would not believe how many soybean acres are going in the Dakotas and Minnesota right now. And for folks who are further south than that, it seems like, wow, those guys are planting beans already. We're just planting beans down here. Yeah, it kind of all goes that way. Some springs and conditions are good. Temperatures are warm. Soils are fit. So farmers are putting in whatever they need to get put in, especially coming out of last year with all the prevent plant takers. So we're going to talk through some of the soybean burn down herbicide situations that we're running into with prevent plant, with cover crops, with just a lot of winter annual weeds in some of these reduced till fields. There's a lot of different situations going on, a lot of different weeds out there. So we'll talk through some of those things today. We'll also take your calls and questions throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Yeah, a lot of things going on out in the fields right now. Farmers, as I mentioned, really, really working hard planting whatever crop they've got to plant. It's a lot of corn going in, a lot of soybeans going in around us, but certainly we talked to a lot of other growers the last couple of weeks here. It sounds like peanut planting is getting going in some parts in the south, and I think the cotton might still be a little ways off, but a lot of things happening out there. Brian, with the soybean burn down, it does change things when we've got the Enlist E3 soybeans, the Extend dicamba tolerant soybeans, and it changes them for the better for the soybean burn down. We've got some great options now that we can do without worrying about the crop injury potential that we used to see.
Yep, absolutely. There were still a lot of people who were using 2,4-D as a burn down, and I can't stand that in front of anything other than obviously Enlist beans that are tolerant to it. And the reason why is because I want you to maximize yield. It's great to kill weeds, but if you hurt your crop at the same time, what good is that? So for years, I've been trying to talk guys out of using 2,4-D in front of soybeans because I just have seen so many problems over the years. And yeah, it's not always going to hurt your yield 5 or 10 bushels, but when it does, you're going to be awfully sad. So and most of the time, it's going to hurt at least a little bit. And I don't want it to hurt at all. We've got a risky enough profession as it is. Times are tough enough economically. So don't use 2,4-D in your burn down. Unless it's in front of Enlist, then it's great. Just like dicamba, you should never even dream about using that in a soybean burn down, but with Extend beans, it's fantastic. So yeah, we've got two great options there, but the number one thing I wanted to talk to you about today is this. So like here on our farm, today it's going to be close to 80 degrees. Later this week, it's going to be 80 degrees. And so everybody's all fired up and they're planting corn and beans as fast as they can and all that's great. But here are the two problems I'm concerned about. Number one, that the beans pop up before you get your burn down on. So if it's 80 degrees wherever you are going to be, you probably want to burn down first and then plant. Because otherwise, I'm afraid you're not going to shut the planter down tomorrow or the next day. And those beans very well could be up in 3 to 5 days if we're seeing some 80 degree temps. I'm fully expecting the beans that we put in on Saturday to be up by this coming Saturday. So we got to make sure we're getting the burn down in or burn down done. The second thing I'm worried about is if all of a sudden it turns cold. And so you planted today and it's 80 and tomorrow it's only 55, 60, maybe even 65. And you go, well, the spray should work just fine. I'm going to get out here in the morning when the wind is calm. But if it's 50 degrees out or 55 degrees in the morning, how good's your herbicide going to work? That's what I worry about. We've tracked back most of the Roundup complaints in the last 25 years in our region here. And a lot of them, you know what it stems to? It comes back to what was the temperature at or around spraying? And the at spraying, you understand. Okay, so if it's not 65, 70 degrees, it's probably going to have a tough time for that burn down herbicide to work. But let's also talk about the around times. And what I mean by that is, how cold has it been? So yeah, if it's been 80 degrees this week and then all of a sudden it turns cold, it's not too bad. The plants, your weeds are pretty actively growing. But if let's say you're planting next week and for whatever reason it's colder or wherever you are, it's colder. I just want you to think about, hey, those nighttime temperatures a couple days before and a couple days after spraying are critical. if you want great results. So my suggestion for you is this. Either you save your money and wait until the weather warms up a little bit, if you can, or you say, you know what, I got to spray right now. I'm going to bump the rate a little more. So like with Roundup, we'll tell you, you got to bump that rate 50%. 50, not 15. 50, 50%.
Well, it sounds terrible, Brian, but talk about dollars. That doesn't really add up to a whole lot more.
It might
dollars.
Only be an extra 50 cents or a dollar. I mean, it's no big deal. But the point is, you need to increase the rate to overcome those cold temperatures, because what's going to happen is if the weather is so cold that the weed isn't actively growing, the weed isn't going to take in as much herbicide, number one. It's not going to move the herbicide to the growing point as fast, number two. And so by the time that herbicide reaches the growing point, there's not a lethal dose there. And if there's not a lethal dose there, you don't have control. So you just wasted your money. And now you actually may have made things worse because you made the weed tougher to kill. You possibly have added to weed resistance. And now you get a real challenge. I get a lot of questions where guys will spray, doesn't work. They call me and it's a week later or whatever. And they go, yeah, I don't think it works. Should I go back out now and hit it again? And I go, no, the weed's not actively growing again. You're going to waste your money a second time. Now you got to let that weed actually get started greening up and really growing again. So the whole thing is, though, if you're going to increase the rate, it's still got to be on label. I don't remember if I talked about this on the show or not, but last week I had a question from an agronomist who had a question from a farmer about spraying dicamba. And he said, yeah, I'm going to use a pint of dicamba right now, and the daytime temps are only 55 where I'm at. I said, well, it's not going to work. You can try it, but it's not going to work. And he goes, well, how about if I increase the rate? Let's say I go a quart. And I said, well, that would be great. It would probably work then. But here's the problem. It's not labeled. You can't spray stuff that's off label. So make sure you've got good weather when you're spraying and use the maximum labeled rate at all times. All right, well, stay with us. We'll talk more about soybean burn down coming up right after this.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about soybean burndown. If you have questions on that topic, or if you have any agronomic questions that we could help you with, please give us a call today. 844-44-AG-PHD is our number. Let's start off with Lowell Sandell with Valent right now. When we're talking about soybean burn down, Lowell, we get a lot of questions about, well, what do I need to mix with this and what do I need to mix with that? And I look at products like Fierce and Valor as, you know, we've got some pretty good burn down in those if we use them right.
Yeah, we do. The Valor part of both of those chemistries does provide some pretty good burn down activity on a lot of the winter annuals we have out there. But to get some of the weeds, some of the tougher ones like mare's tail and giant ragweed, we typically do recommend tank mixing with an auxin herbicide, be it Xtend or Enlist or whatever the grower is most comfortable with using for their farm.
Yeah, I was just talking to an agronomist this morning, and we were talking about this soybean burn down topic, and he was wondering, they were going in front of Enlist soybeans, and he was asking what I thought about Enlist One and how much to add to what their pre-emerge product was that he had. And yeah, he started mentioning some of these things. I'm like, well, you're going to get some extra kick out of that Valor component. You're going to get some extra kick out of your Metribuzin. And I think about that. What do we need to do to heat those up even more? Now, obviously, adding in one of those auxins definitely helps. And then the other thing is, how big of weeds can we actually bring down? Because he was mentioning, the farmer said the weeds are really small. And then as we got into the conversation, I'm like, hey, you said the weeds were small. How big are they? And he just got a big smile. He's like, well, every farmer I talked to says the weeds are small. So I'm guessing they probably aren't.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, a lot of the winter annuals, it's a little deceptive because, you know, they don't grow really high or, you know, tall initially. And, you know, they've been out there ever since last fall in a lot of cases. And, you know, when we apply Fierce or Valor or in combination with an auxin herbicide, we typically do recommend a crop oil or some kind of oil adjuvant to really help penetrate the leaf cuticle and the chemistries that are working on the foliar part of that really helps improve performance.
Yeah, it sure does. And I do like having, when we talk about any soybean burn down, I love having these residual components like we're talking about out there too. Things like Valor, for example, to get that next flush out of the way for us too, because we know it's coming. As soon as we get some moisture out there, we've got things planted, it's just a matter of time before we see that next flush. We can wipe out most of those. We're in good shape. Like water hemp is one that I get a lot of questions about, Lowell. And oftentimes, especially here in the north, we don't have water hemp that's necessarily up. We're burning down everything else, but we got to leave something out there to stop that because it's going to keep coming all through the season.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, at the time of a lot of soybeans get planted, you know, the water hemp and Palmer amaranth, in the northern geographies, they just aren't quite up yet, but give it a little heat and a couple weeks, and they will certainly be there. And that's really where it's important to have, you know, a Valor or even a Fierce residual chemistry to really give you, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of good residual control on water hemp out there, and just basically get your soybean crop off to a weed-free start. And really, that's kind of the key in getting the most yield on that acre, is no competition for that soybean for the first two or three trifoliates.
Yeah, that's for sure. We're talking with Lowell Sandell with Valent. Lowell, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today to talk about soybean burn down. Good luck here as we head into the spring.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Set out to Ohio. We've got Mark Laux with us right now with Ohio State. Mark, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you all?
Well, we're doing good, and we're having more fun talking about soybean burn down this year than last year because we're able to do it in April, which is really nice because the weeds aren't quite as crazy big as they are when we're planting in June and nothing's been done to the field the whole year.
Right. I think it remains to be seen here. We're kind of in a wet pattern, so we're getting a little bit done, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's been good here. We've been pretty dry. How does that change things? And let's talk about that, because if it's wet, it gets a little tougher to get out there. So maybe a farmer's in getting a recommendation from his agronomist. He's picking up product, and he knows darn well by the time he gets back out there, it might be a couple of weeks, and now the weeds are not 4 or 6 inches anymore.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you've got all the winter annuals, and then you've got, for us, giant ragweed and then mare's tail. We don't typically have water hemp up either. As you talked about. So if you start with like that glyphosate 2,4-D burn down, a lot of people use, or glyphosate sharpen. As you get, what we typically recommend if you get delayed is making it more complex so you have more active. So you could take like the glyphosate 2,4-D and put a sharpen component in it, right? You could do the same thing with like a dicamba burn down if you have that. One of our biggest concerns, because we don't worry about giant ragweed burn down because dicamba and 2,4-D annihilate it, right? But mare's tail, the overwintered mare's tail, if you can get in early, like a glyphosate 2,4-D with some metribuzin, so you've got a couple different things working on it. But as it gets bigger, that's going to start to fail on you, and that's when you're going to need like the sharpened component. Dicamba hangs in a little bit better. And then we actually have some guys that, because glufosinate Liberty's gotten cheaper, so we have some guys that are starting to incorporate some glufosinate in their burn down as well. In a lot of cases, that's just for the mare's tail.
You know, we were really impressed last year. We had some Enlist E3 soybeans. We did the Liberty with the Enlist 1, and wow, did that smoke some mare's tail. What have you seen from that combo?
Yeah, that was in a burn down you used it, or in a poke?
Yes. Well, we got done planting June 17th last year, so it was a little bit of an unusual year, to say the least.
Yeah, no, that's a great mix on mare's tail. That's one of the great things about that bean, is you have that flexibility of the glyphosate to glufosinate in the 2,4-D. So I think you have to use glufosinate. If you're going to do a true burn down, you have to make sure you use glufosinate the right way, as you guys know, I'm sure, at gallonage. Great. It really benefits here from a little metribuzin again with it, because you get the photosynthesis inhibitor in there. How about with it also? Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, how about Gramoxone then? Do you see that as a lot different, or do you do a lot of the same kinds of things there?
Yeah, Gramoxone. Our standard recommendation for the Gramoxone is that with 2,4-D with metribuzin. I think you need all three to really get what. Our standard burn down complement on the Eastern Corn Belt, I think you need all three. Now, if you're early enough, you could do the Gramoxone possibly with just the 2,4-D, but that's a great burn down. We had guys came back to that when the Gramoxone price came down a little bit, so we had kind of a resurgence. And you know what you have in the glyphosate 2,4-D or glyphosate 2,4-D metribuzin is glyphosate doesn't have any activity on the glyphosate resistant weeds, and the Gramoxone, you bring that back in, and we definitely had some pickup on that. I think more people would actually use that. There's some I don't think it's warranted, but you know, the fact that it's restricted use and all that, I think prevents a few people from using it.
How about the cool weather? I know we've got rain coming here over the next week, and temperatures are supposed to cool back down, low 60s, upper 50s. You know, it's easy. Like today, we're going to be up well up into the 70s and sunshine. It's easy to get burned down to work. Can you be effective with the burn down when you're in the 50s, low 60s?
Yeah, we've been progressing. I worry about cold nighttime temperatures as much as anything. You know, when you start hitting frost and things like that is what we get more concerned about.
Sure.
Below 40 at night. I think, you know, you're going to lose some speed of activity, and that's when, like, the 2,4-D will start to get worse on mare's tail. My conclusion after doing this for a long time is I can tell people, hey, it might be a little cool and not the best thing to do, and they're going to look at the ground and say, I can run on it anyway.
Absolutely. No, it's great. Once we get to this stage of the game, everybody's just ready to go. There's no doubt about that. We're talking with Mark Laux at Ohio State. Mark, any last comments? You mentioned mare's tail, giant ragweed, not a real big deal, and winter annuals as being big things for growers in your area.
No, you mentioned the residual, and of course we encourage the residual. We pretty much should go everywhere, because we've got the tough weeds are trying to get giant rag, mare's tail, water hemp, palmer. We really need it in there. So it can antagonize once in a while, but if you put the right combination together and early enough, it's typically fine.
Talking with Mark Laux here again with Ohio State. Mark, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on here. Good luck. You're heading into the summer.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Talking about soybean burn down on today's program and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Hey. Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Thanks for listening to Ag PhD Radio today. We're talking about soybean burn down on the show, but we will take any agronomic question you may have if you give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Nebraska. Got our friend Greg on with us right now. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Darren, and it's a beautiful day to spray burn down, which the guys are doing for me here today. Temperature is 80 degrees, very little wind, a great day to kill weeds.
Yeah, if we could just dial that up each year, burn down would become so much easier.
I agree. You know, it's been very few days like this to spray, so this is ideal. And just this topic today is very timely for me personally, but very important for all soybean producers. As you know, there's lots of successful steps to a successful soybean yield, and I think one of them that sometimes producers overlook or maybe skip is the burn down and the pre. And you guys have done a great job in explaining that and showing the importance of it, and I firmly believe in it as well.
All right, so on your farm, what weeds are you mainly seeing out there right now?
Well, Darren, right now, as I think about it, you know, 10 days ago when I woke up, the ground was white because we had an inch of snow, and the weeds are slower to come than normal in years because of the fact that we've been so cold for so long. But what I'm seeing right now is about an inch tall ragweed. I'm seeing some pennycress about the same height. And the mare's tail is just kind of poking through the ground. The water hemp really hasn't emerged yet because of the colder weather. But yet, you know, I think a lot of people say, well, you know, in late spring like this, the fields look relatively clean. I'll just skip the burn down or pre. and just hit it post. And I think that's going to be a, you know, a major mistake, because days like this really start those weeds emerging. And I think I've heard you guys say before, it's one thing to control weeds. We don't want to just control them. We want to eliminate them. And I think, you know, we would regret not putting a burn down and killing what's there along with a pre to ensure that first at least 30 days or more of good residual control.
Yeah, it sure is tempting when you just don't see that much out there to skip it. And I know what you're talking about with that pre. It needs moisture to work, and it's not going to necessarily bring down a whole bunch of weeds that are already up. We're just counting on it to stop the future weeds from coming. You know, it looks like we may have some rain in the forecast. So how are you coming on soybean planting?
Well, after today, I should be about a third done, which is a little bit ahead of pace. And you mentioned rain, and the rain is in the forecast for this area of the state for tonight. Pretty good chance. So that would be really good. I'm using Sonic as my pre-plant herbicide, and that would really be nice to activate that and get it start working right away.
Yeah, I like getting a little moisture. I know we've got some drier soils. Brian would probably prefer we don't see any moisture till we're completely done planting. I don't mind getting a little shot. It seems like there's always maintenance jobs to do, and it's nice to go through the machines if we get a rain day, that kind of thing, or just, if nothing else, get a good night's rest and a little break from the action. But I like it for getting the products to work. We've got kind of dry soils up towards the top. Are you drying out where you're at, or moisture conditions pretty good?
We are drying. It's been a rather dry April, and so, you know, rain would be welcome right now. It has helped the wet spots from last year dry out beautifully, and some of those fields that I couldn't even get planted last year have just turned out really nice and good shape, and been kind of hitting those first. So, yeah, but I know what you mean. It'd be kind of nice to keep going, you know, these days like this, but a rain now and then is certainly most welcome, and it does help us catch up on some maintenance and some other things. And like you mentioned, very important for farmers to keep their rest up too. And so it's a good thing to do that.
Well, Greg, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay safe through this planting season. I know it gets to be a busy time, and you're right, getting a little rest in here and there is a good deal too.
Great to talk with you, Darren. You take care.
You bet. Thanks. You know, Brian, Greg brought up a couple of good points. We've got some small weeds out there, and that gets to be a challenge for some growers. Man, I don't know if there's that many weeds out there, but you're really taking a chance if you let a 2-inch tall winter annual go, because it might have a foot long root underneath it and just be ready to explode.
Well, maybe. But I just remember this. So I was a young farmer and young agronomist, and I went out, looked at one of our fields, and I came back and I told our dad, hey, I'm not finding a whole lot out there. Is it even worth spraying? And he goes, absolutely, because there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that you just flat out didn't see. Trust me, we got to spray it. There's enough there that it's going to pay. And I just have always thought about that whenever I look at, because let's face it, I mean, whenever we scout fields, do we really look at every single square foot across the field? Do we look at 1/100th of the square footage across that field? Probably not. So especially when we start talking about the early sprays, that's where it's most important. Getting the burn down done, but then think about this too. We're not just burning down, we're leaving residual for later. So even if there isn't a lot that's up today, that's fine. We're going to leave a bunch of residual for later. So we talk all the time in soybeans about the 3 pre program, using a yellow, metribuzin, and a PPO, either Valor or Authority. Well, right there, you've got two fantastic burn down products that we talked about a little bit today. Metribuzin's a great burn down product, and Valor and Authority, they're great burn down products as well. Now, if you want to heat those up, because a lot of times just those two aren't going to cut it. And by the way, the yellow won't give any burn down, nor will a group 15. Okay. And by group 15, I'm talking about Dual, Harness, Surpass, Outlook, Warrant, you know, all those products. Some are just labeled for corn, but many are also labeled for soybeans. But anyway, the group 15s nor the yellows, they're going to burn down anything. What you have in that 3-pre that does burn down, though, is the Metribuzin and the PPO. But if you want to heat it up, you can throw 2,4-D with it in front of Enlist. You can throw dicamba in front of Extend. You could use Gramoxone at any point. You can throw in some crop oil. You can use some methylated seed oil. You can use fertilizer. You also have Liberty that's basically the same thing as Roundup in terms of its non-selective, so it should have activity in almost every weed out there. And the good news with Liberty is there are no resistant weeds right now, whereas Roundup obviously has a lot of resistant weeds. So you have a lot of opportunities to throw something else with whatever you're spraying. My number one piece of advice is be super careful about what you're using, because we can't have crop injury. That's why I talk so much against using 2,4-D, unless, of course, it's Enlist beans. And also, I talk against Sharpen. And you might say, what? Sharpen? I thought that was a good herbicide. Yes, Sharpen is a good herbicide. And if you don't know what I mean by Sharpen, it's in a lot of different mixes. So there's Optil, there's Zidua Pro, there, it was called originally Kixor. So if you're familiar with any of those names, it's got Sharpen in there. That is a PPO that's similar to Valor and Authority. We love it in Verdict, for example, in corn. We love Sharpen in front of wheat. They are the best burn down products that you can use in front of those two crops, but not in front of soybeans. And the reason why is the tolerance that soybeans have to Sharpen. It's very low. Now, some people are going to tell you, well, there are certain varieties that are better than others. Well, that's true, but 99% of farmers and agronomists can't tell you which of those varieties it is. And also, if a plant is under stress and you're already pushing it on herbicide tolerance, well, what's going to happen now when your plant's under stress? So just when you need crop safety the most, you don't have it. Well, we can't have that. So that's the reason why I try talking guys all the time out of using Sharpen in front of soybeans. I would never, ever, ever dream about using it in front of soybeans today. No way, no how. Use Valor or Authority. So the whole thing with Sharpen is you have to use such a low rate in front of soybeans, otherwise you'll hurt the beans. Well, that low rate will give you some help on burn down, but it's not great. And then you have no residual, I mean, to speak of, might maybe a week or two. Why not use Valor or Authority? You're going to spend similar money. You're going to get way more residual. You get almost as good a burn down as what Sharpen gives you. So there are so many reasons to go Valor or Authority. Just leave the Sharpen out.
What about AIM, Brian? Where does that fit in?
Oh, yeah, sorry. And I forgot to mention AIM. AIM is another one. You could use AIM as a burn down. That gives you no residual. That's a PPO. That really heats things up. There are some other products out there, too, like Harmony, Old Harmony. Some people will throw a little bit of that in. Yeah. Some of these things that have zero residual, yeah, you can use it, but just be careful that you actually are spraying before any beans come up.
A lot of choices when it comes to soybean burn down herbicides. We're getting some questions on other things as well. We'll get to those coming up next.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I could hardly wait for that mailbag music to stop. I was so excited, Brian. We got so many questions here. I want to dive into some of these, and I'm at great risk.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with this first one, and it's a drainage question.
Wait, okay. Before you get to that, though, as you were saying all this, you can tell, if you listen to our show on a regular basis, you can tell how passionate we are about agronomy. Like even today, and I realize I'm going to give you a hard time if you're doing something that I feel like as an agronomist, I wouldn't recommend to any of the people that I work with because I've seen failures. So I've been an agronomist for 30 years now, Darren close to that, and we just have seen so much stuff over the years. We have so much experience now, and it's fun at this point because you can see what works and what doesn't. And we get so many calls and emails, and I'm sure we'll get to something today where it's going to be somebody doing something where we go, ooh, it might work, but we've seen it fail way too many times. So you're going to get a lot of blunt answers from us, and especially me. So I just hope you can understand we're super passionate about this. This is one of the toughest times we've had to deal with in terms of economics in agriculture in a long time. And so we're here to help you, and we're going to hopefully steer you clear of a few things that could be problems, like I was talking about with 2,4-D in front of beans, sharpen in front of beans. Some of these things, I mean, there are reasons why we talk so much about certain things and reasons why we push you away from other things as much as we can, and we'll be right up front with you and tell you exactly why. So one of the challenges, you know, anymore, all the universities, extension offices, they've gotten their funding cut so much. You only get your information from people who are selling you stuff. So what that means is you're only going to hear the positives. You're not going to hear all the negatives. We're here to bring up the negatives as well. Okay, go ahead, Darren.
All right, so here we go. And for those of you who listen to our show for a while, you know what kind of risk I'm taking. You're starting with the drainage question. This might end our show, so we'll see. We've got over 20 minutes left, so I'm hoping we can get it in. All right, this is from Casey. Casey says, I'm doing drainage in a farm field. I'm wondering what conditions would trigger you to use gravel around the pipe versus just laying the pipe in the soil?
I don't know that there are any conditions where I would use gravel around the pipe. We have never really done that before. I mean, maybe if it's a big main or something, I don't know. That's a good question. That's probably what I would say. If I had to trench something in and I've got this big hole dug with an excavator or something, then yeah, maybe then I would put gravel around it just to make sure that things go well for a really super long time.
That's
plowing our lines in.
When you think about it, if you're using an excavator and you think, you know, it might not be perfectly even at the bottom. Now, with a lot of the new controls, they can do an awesome job. But if you're worried about that, I don't want it to have any kind of ups and downs in it, then yeah, you might do that just to level things out perfectly. But even so, I don't know if I'd trust that.
I don't see it so much for leveling, Darren. The reason why guys are going to put gravel around it is just so they have better drainage, better the water can get in there better. Well, if you're digging it out with an excavator, a lot of times those are solid lines. Those are just great big main lines. So, I mean, it's rare when you're going to dig something out with an excavator and throw in a perforated tile line. So, I don't know. I mean, like I say, I don't think we've done any of this on our farm. We probably put in a couple hundred miles of tile on our farm over the years, maybe even more than that. I've lost count. But all I'm saying is we plow almost everything in. It's fast. It's easy. It works well. We'll put a sock around it sometimes, or we'll use the narrow slot tile. What we worry about is fine sand and silt. So fine sand and silt are our two biggest concerns. One other spot that might be a possibility is, let's say that I had 20 or 30% sodium. I mean, just a sodium level that's so ridiculous that, I mean, you would hope it never happens to anybody. But maybe then, just to make sure I keep that tile line open and working for quite a while. But I don't know. There aren't a lot of situations where I would use gravel.
All right. Thanks for the question, Casey. Next one comes from Trace. And Trace says, I'm seeing people on the farm pages and personal pages talking about fertilizer prices, especially nitrogen, and wanting to use DEF as liquid urea ammonium nitrate fertilizer.
Yeah, there's nitrogen in DEF. It's basically nitrogen and, if I remember correctly, distilled water.
Yeah,
so,
it's deionized water. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So I can't possibly imagine that's going to be cheaper.
There's only like a pound and a quarter in a gallon, something like that. It's really low. So yeah,
I thought it was close to 30% urea, but
it's 32% urea.
Yeah. But anyway, 32.5. I can't imagine that you can't buy the semi-load, buy nitrogen cheaper than what DEF is going to be. So very unrealistic. And then you got to haul that water around. Yeah, I can't imagine that'd be cheap. I haven't priced it out, but I guess we'll have to do that.
Okay, I got one from Brent here in North Central Iowa. He said, when I'm trying to raise base saturation K, it seems like Neil Kinsey said that if the base saturation of calcium is over 85, not to bother applying extra K in those spots since it won't be able to overcome the double positive charge of the calcium. How have you been able to raise base saturation K in these types of areas with calcium over 85?
Okay, so it comes back to this high pH thing that Neil talks about from time to time, and he's got that in his book. And if you don't know who we're talking about, this is Neil Kinsey. We have him on the show from time to time. He's one of the world's leading experts in soils. So he is awesome. A lot of his stuff is fantastic. We talk about it quite often. His beliefs on almost everything are the same as ours, except for this one thing. I think that's the only thing we found so far. And I think what it comes back to is, and the thing with Neil is, he has been around what feels like forever. He's in his 70s now, but he's got so much experience. And he talks so much about, hey, we did this, and 30 years later, here's how it turned out. We did this, we did this, we did this. So he's worked with people all over the world in all kinds of different crops. And he's talking about firsthand experience. So that's why we love him so much. It's not theoretical. It's put it into practice. Okay, but here's the thing. There are a lot of people with high pH soils that then they have high calcium. There are very few soil tests that I've looked at over the years that are very high calcium and below 6.5 in pH. So a lot of times we're talking about the two things together. It's high calcium, and by high pH, I'm talking just above 6.5 because that's his cutoff for where he says, well, if you throw potassium out there, you can't build it very well with commercial fertilizer. You could with manure or compost, but not commercial fertilizer. But here's the whole thing. When we have these high calcium soils, and a lot of times it's over 6.5 pH, they're usually high in cation exchange capacity. Well, if you've got let's call it a 30 CEC, and let's compare that real quick to a 3 CEC. How much potassium do you need to take it from 2% to what I'd really like on my farm is 7%? How much would you need? And I don't have exact numbers for you, but I'll just throw some stuff out. And I'll bet you I'm not all that far off in a lot of soils. For potassium, actual K, I mean like actual K, not potash, but I'm talking about the actual K, how much would you need to go from 2% to 7% base saturation K? My guess, Darren, just I don't have numbers in front of me like on our farm, but I'll bet you it would take at least 1,000 pounds of actual K, maybe 1,500. If I had a 3 CEC, so in other words, super sandy, to go from 2% K to 7% K, it might take 300 pounds of actual K. So you see where I'm going with this. It's taking so much. And how many people go, you know what? I don't mind spending $200 an acre on potash to build my K levels. I mean, a lot of people would lose their minds if you told them that. So they put on, let's call it 50% more than they normally would use. And they go, well, my K level didn't go up at all, Brian. I was at 2.1. Now I'm at 2.2. That's nothing. Like, well, of course it is, because you got a 30 CEC. So my point here, Brent, is you can absolutely build your K, but my guess is, you didn't give us all your soil information, but I'll guess you're 85% calcium or higher. You're talking really heavy soil. It just requires a lot. Do it over time or do it once, whatever, but you need more K. You got to get your K at least above 4. Well, stay tuned. We'll answer more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag next.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Just wrapping up the show here today. If you've got a question for us, our number is 844-44-AG-PHD. So right before the break, we were answering this question from Jeff down in Iowa, and Brent down in Iowa, and he was asking about building K levels, and can you do it with high calcium? So I've got a great example here. I just pulled out from our soils clinic. Let's see, this must have been this. Yeah, this was this winter. We had one soil test example in there. And the cation exchange capacity was 29.5. So if you remember, I had just made the comment that, boy, if you had a 30 CEC, I'll bet you'd take between 1,000 and 1,500 pounds of actual K to get you where, like for me, I would want to go, going all the way to 7% base saturation K because the soil's so heavy. So anyway, in this one, I just ran the actual numbers. 29.5 cation exchange capacity, 1.6 base saturation K. Well, let's say I wanted to go to 7. Now, I'm not saying you have to go to 7, okay? We want to get to at least 4. But for me, on our farm, I want to go for big time yield, and I do want to go to 7% base saturation K. Well, here's what it would take. 1,262 pounds of K. Okay. So potash, you know, we're talking like 2,500 pounds of potash. So are you really willing to spend, let's see what that costs you right now, probably $325, $350 bucks an acre just on potassium alone? Of course not. You'd say, man, you're nuts. I'm not doing that. And that's the reason why people think you can't build. You absolutely can, but it's just, it's going to, if you're trying to get to even 4%, if all you're doing is 50% more than normal, or maybe 100% more than normal, so doubling your normal rate, it might take you 20 years, 30 years to get to where you really need to go. So it's just you got heavy soil. There's good and bad with heavy soil. The bad is it just takes a lot to build that thing up. The other thing is, so Darren and I were talking during our commercial break there about, you know what? Darren just said, how about sulfur? I mean, maybe you just need a lot of sulfur. And in many cases, these high calcium soils, they do need a fair amount of sulfur. And that will help drive the calcium down a little bit. Sometimes it's very low magnesium. I mean, there are lots of things out there. But what we want you to look at is the whole thing. If you're just looking at one individual thing and saying, oh, this is my problem here, it might be. But just let's work on fixing all the things that need to be fixed and build up our potassium and our phosphorus, our sulfur, zinc, manganese, iron, copper, boron, instead of worrying so much about a few of these excesses out there. You fix eventually the excesses by solving the shortages. All right, go ahead, Darren, with the next question.
All right, got one from Sarah. She said, I've got a weed called Star of Bethlehem that's popping up in our horse cattle pasture, and it's starting to spread into other areas. Wondering what herbicide you recommend to spray that won't hurt my fescue and other grasses, and also hopefully doesn't have any grazing restrictions. Although these weeds look like wild garlic, they don't have any smell to the bulbs. Hey, you're right. It does look a lot like wild garlic, Sarah. What I would look for, the products that are labeled on that, would be carfentrazone-based. So that would be the same active ingredient as AIM that we're actually just talking about on today's program. AIM is really nice burn-down activity on weeds like that, doesn't leave any soil residual and has no grazing restrictions I'm aware of. In the grass market, there's a product called Quicksilver that's carfentrazone based. There's also a product called Speed Zone that has that carfentrazone plus some of the auxins. I think there's dicamba, 240, MCP, that kind of thing. So anyway, those would be the best choices for you, and I don't believe there's any grazing restrictions either. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Got some feedback from Jim. He's down in Kansas, and he said, I'm a city guy that watches your show, and we've got ag all around us. Hopefully when I retire, I can find a farmer that I could work for part-time. Thanks for the good work. Keep up your show. Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate that. Really glad that you're enjoying it. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We've got John with us now in Delaware. John, how are you doing today?
Oh, not bad. How about yourself, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a few questions. A couple of them are being nosy, I guess. my nephew bought a farm, and we got beef cattle and some of the pastures there, and he's wanting to plant corn, and he just bought the property not long ago, and I think he tried it last year, and we already got, like, I want to say 50 bushel to the acre. So I was just wondering what you'd suggest. I mean, planting corn back, but what would you to get him going on the right path? You know, we want to get some drainage. I seen what a water, we had 2 inches of rain the other day, and I want to get some drainage properly, but I didn't know what you suggest I know you can't make a living off of 50 bushel to the acre.
No, not at all, especially at these prices. What I would do is the same thing that I did on my own farm. I was just out on Saturday with a couple of my kids. We pulled soil samples on a piece of ground that we're trying to figure out, okay, what can we do on that ground to improve things? And we start with a complete soil analysis where we get micronutrients, base saturation, cation exchange capacity, all the major nutrients that we need as well for the crop. And then from that, I start building a program of, okay, how can I feed this? And I'm planning on doing variable rate fertility, so spreading fertilizer where I need it a little bit more, and then where I don't need it as much, putting a little bit less on and so forth. That's where I would start. And then, like you mentioned, the drainage, if you need to do some drainage work out there, that'd be a good time to try and get that done. We've done quite a bit of ours in crop. It will rip up a little bit of crop. But if you've got a shot to get somebody out there either before or right after the season to get her done, that'd be a good way to do it too.
Okay. And then another question is, how many bushels do you roughly, on an average, I know you probably can't really tell me, but how much bushels should he get to make it a profit or just break even?
That's a good question.
That's the question every farmer needs to know, and it varies a lot.
I know.
Yeah, you know, I would say a lot of guys, you know, you would hope that 50 bushel could become 150 really soon, and then you'd hope it could become 250 down the road. And, you know, it all depends on what you've got into that land and how much money he's got into, you know, equipment expense and all of that as well. But at today's prices, yeah, you're probably going to need at least 150 or 200 bushel to really start making money.
Yeah, but it all depends on what you paid for the land. And, you know, even the fertilizer thing, if you've got manure that is right there that, let's say, you get for a good price or free, that certainly helps. I mean, there are ways to do this, and equipment is another big expense. I mean, there are lots of different expenses there, and it all depends on what you have for expense versus what you're going to get out. So, yeah, okay. It really varies a lot. And to say, even 50 bushel corn, could you theoretically make it on 50 bushel corn? It's possible if you had almost no costs.
Right. He's my nephew, so it's my brother's son. And I bought, I got a 2090 case, and I got some equipment that I've been just, I'm a construction worker, so I bought some stuff to help him, and, and the disc and stuff like that. So, you know, that part is like a fun thing for us because it's new.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, and it's paid for. So that part he doesn't, and he bought an old combine, which it did work. You know, we fixed it, and he got it running, and the man, he bought it pretty cheap. So that part, he doesn't have, nothing is paid for. So that part,
oh,
I just like to help him out.
You know what, John, when everything's paid for on the farm, then farming becomes really fun. it's knowing all the payments that you got to make that's the not fun part.
Well, then the next question I had for you two is, I know your brothers, and how many acres do you all have on your farm in South Dakota? Because I hunt in South Dakota for the last 28 years. Been going there every year.
You know, one thing too, John, and I know a lot of folks come to South Dakota. It's great hunting here for pheasants and deer and different things. And so everybody's always asking us too, have you guys got some hunting property? And for the most part, we don't. We've got upland stuff. In fact, there's even a property I've got that borders with my uncle's. He's got all the hunting ground, and I've got none. I've just got the crop ground. So I'm mostly just interested in raising the corn and soybeans and hoping that my uncle takes care of his deer problems so they don't eat too much of my crop.
Yeah, I know, because you guys do not like the animals that are tearing everything up.
We love animals, just not eating our crops.
Right. I agree with you. So then, what part, where I go is Merdu, Draper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That yeah, that's so I don't know that's kind of central and western South Dakota. We're way on the east side. We're pretty close to Sioux Falls, probably where you fly in, John. Hey, Jen, thanks for the questions today, though. Really appreciate that. It's fun to hear guys that are just having fun with this thing. And like you say, helping your nephew out a little bit and bringing your expertise from the construction side, too, with the equipment and so forth is pretty cool. Thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. And we had a fun time today talking about soybean burndown options. And honestly, we probably could have kept talking for the whole hour just on all the different ways that you could burn down weeds and reduce till and no-till acres going into soybeans. Just the big things I'd say, take care of the weeds that are up right now, but leave yourself with some residual out there at the same time. It'll really save you down the road. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.